So there's not a stem cell in this slide, at least one that was, or in this talk. I was asked to come and talk about infrastructure, even though I'm mostly a cellular neurobiologist. But infrastructure has been central to what I've done for the last 30 years because I like big instruments that you can't get unless you can share them. And so a lot of what you'll see here has to do with how we've created the capability for researchers to work together, how we've created the capability for researchers to get information at the cellular level with new stains, new dyes, how we've created capabilities for putting that data together in shared databases so that more people can benefit from the data and share it. So the slide that you see here is just an introduction. It says, the future is in the virtualization of communities. 60 years ago, if you wanted to do something special and important and big, you brought everybody together in a mountaintop in New Mexico, and you lined them up weekly and told them what they were going to do for the next week, and you got something hard to do done quickly. Post-war, universities competed with one another like football teams, bringing people to Harvard, Caltech, MIT, and competing to see if they could do important things. Now, because of information technology, we can do this in a very different way. We can bring across disciplines, across institutions. The Mesa here in San Diego is about the best example there is, and we have more expertise here to do that than anywhere else. I've been directing for about 20 years something called the National Center for Microscopy and Imaging Research. The last talk was a good example, although the data from it wasn't acquired at this resource, but some of the data that's like what you showed, Allison, from Nico Toni, is in fact acquired at a resource where we work across scales to bring image information molecular keyed together. And we focus in the domain that I call the mesoscale, where there's a lot of difficulty in connecting between light microscopy and electron microscopy. The harder area to fill in is what I call the supramolecular organization of the cell. How you put the modern terminology of systems biology on top of biological systems in the cell, how you catalog and pull that together and connect it to the omics, how you do that structurally. So for me, the key has always been 3D electron microscopy, except that the 3D electron microscopy that we do involves really pretty expensive pieces of equipment. This is about, the quarter of a cost of a battleship. Here's a person for size reference. She's putting the specimen in, then she has to leave the room. And this is a dendritic spine, or a spiny dendrite, very much like the one that you saw on the last slide that had appeared magically after stem cell created it. You can, of course, put surfaces on this with modern computer graphics. You can measure them. This happens to be one related to a project with Bill Greeno on Fragile X. But that instrument's in Japan. It's the only one in the world. Just like our very special instruments in San Diego, we figured out how to make them generally accessible from a web browser and have not only the instrument online at your scheduled time to use it, just send your specimens, but also data storage and distributed databases and computation like supercomputers if the codes are meant to run there. So in the case of the high-energy electron microscope in Japan, where you can look at specimens the thicknesses you'd normally look at in a light microscope, you're looking through the microscope from this perspective from San Diego, and it's like looking for an airplane in a cloud. The electrons have to ram through this very thick specimen. In order to see what's in there, you actually have to do the computations in real time. So we compute all over the world, and the software makes that invisible or transparent, so it's easy to do. And as you're working, you compare the data to data that's being deposited in a database or had been deposited in a database by investigators doing like experiments. We do the same thing with a new microscope that was just erected in Korea, except here we've delineated proteins in the cis face of the Golgi apparatus, molecularly marked, and we map that. With Roger Chen, who's my partner in crime and my smarter friend, we've done a lot to generate new labels that allow you to do this in living preparations and then go directly to the EM. So here's an actin label. No, it's not GFP. It's something that allows us at the end of the experiment to actually observe the actin in real time. And I'll show you something that's going to come out in PNAS shortly about how you do this in membrane systems. But this is a high-speed two-photon microscope. It's about $1 million, at least when we built it. I don't think there's anything that quite compares on the market yet. Oops. Here we go. Because we had been doing this sort of thing for NIH for years, building access to very large instruments, NIH came to me in about 2000, end of the last century, the beginning of this one, and asked if we could use those technologies to connect clinical centers. I said no. Because the clinical translational activities were too far from where we needed to have people that understood something about the information technology. I agreed to work with what was the National Center for Research Resources to connect some of the advanced imaging centers that were doing MRI, because I thought that was a way that we could actually make progress in a 5-year period. And so this is what resulted. It will be, by 2009, about a $200 million investment, linking sites that are doing different projects, comparing 12 sites working on schizophrenics that are being imaged with functional MRI, about 8 sites doing work on Alzheimer's. So we've normalized across those kinds of non-invasive imaging machines. So they're collaborating, they're sharing infrastructure. All of this is a stable infrastructure. It's operating 7/24, about 400 researchers involved. It's been regarded by the computer science community, or I guess this is Nature, as one of the milestones in scientific computing. You know, some of the other ones that you see up here, this is NIH's support of the beginning of the computing industry. This is the DEC computer, which NIH actually got started. Craig Venter's cloning of the human genome, and here's our little accomplishment setting up the Biomedical Informatics Research Network, which we call mainly a collaboration facilitating enterprise. From the perspective of animal models, this is also important, because what we've done is figure out how to bring together data that comes from multiple types of instruments. This is microscopic MRI that you can use to characterize down to about 15 microns resolution. And we put in that, we use that almost like a geospatial database. In fact, we ripped off technologies from our geoscience colleagues to create the equivalent of Google Earth for organs. Okay. And the data is distributed. So the kinds of things that we like to do in San Diego is acquire these very large maps at the diffraction limit of tissues anywhere in the brain or organ. And then with Larry Smar and our colleagues at Cal-IT, we create visualization endpoints that let you look at the very large span of tissues at very high resolution. It's kind of like being able to be in the forest and see the edges of the forest, but see the trees, the leaves, and the bugs on the leaves in the same scenario. And you can move in and out, and you can share it with colleagues. So this image right here, this is probably about 50,000 images. One tile is about the size of that parenthesis. These are stained with quantum dots. It's 3 proteins. And you can just keep zooming up, right? And if you want, you can pop a single cell out of there and turn your head to the right and look at it in 3D if you had filled it with a different fluorophore than the bulk. These we now make as little portal endpoints and connect them together all up and down the state and around the world. You can drill down with what I don't have time to explain to you, what's called electron tomography, where you can look at the structure of mitochondria and map the proteins in. Okay. So this is actually something that we accomplished about 10 years ago, which was refining the structure of the mitochondria to know that instead of the Christie being baffles, they're little tubes. And of course, this is a center of focus for those interested in apoptosis and other interesting things. Roger Chen's lab and mine have spent easily the last 10 years with Roger's genius coming up with all kinds of ways of going to multiple fluorescent labels, but more importantly, for what I just showed you, going from light to electron microscopy so we can bridge the scales. This is just to point out something that we put in Science this year that gives you a little bit of a sort of where it is now and where one can go with regard to molecular labeling and other techniques. And this is just showing you that with many techniques, you can go from light to electron, light to electron. One of them, let's see if this will run. This is the one that will be in PNAS, I think, this month. We moved this technique, this so-called tetracysteine technique, which Invitrogen now markets these reagents, so I think I set up the timing of these two talks correctly. So this is just looking at what happens to the Golgi apparatus during mitosis. We figured out that everybody had misunderstood what happens to the Golgi during mitosis. It doesn't go back to the ER in bulk. But more importantly, we noticed that every time a cell finishes division, there are two Golgis. One of them that hangs out by the midbody. Well, with this technique, when we first developed it, this tetracysteine technique, it wasn't possible to look inside the lumen or on the extracellular surface. So we had to come up with a way of doing a transient treatment with a membrane permeant phosphine in order to make these tetracysteines available. And then we transiently label, and we can make this technique work in the Golgi. And then you can go directly to the EM at any point and get better resolution in EM. Okay, this is the cell we stopped when it had two Golgis. This is a little electron tomogram of those labeled components inside the cell. It gets better. Okay. And Zach, this goes back to when you and I were young, 35, 40, well, 20 years ago, right? So about that time when John Lindstrom was still here at Salk, when I came to UCSD in, I guess, 77, we looked at acetylcholine receptors in negative stain from torpedo. Here you see receptors directly in tissue. Okay. This is the gap junction with the tetracysteine technique. So we can do things now where we can identify molecules and follow them and count them by these correlated light and EM techniques. Well, that's tissue. Cells are fun, so we're making, like my friends Jeff Lichtman and Josh Sains at Harvard doing, you know, mice, we're making all the cell labels that we can come up with different background, if you like, tools. So here are cells labeled, they're living, well, they're not, this is post-living, we stain the nucleic acids afterwards, but beta tubulin flash, actin flash, and here, after photoconversion, here we're tracking an individual Riesch labeled actin filament. So you can stop the action, you can see the components, you can see their molecular partners, you can combine it with FRET and the like. And then you can go to the computer science geeks and say, how do we actually dive into this, right? So these are what these endpoints, which we could have between all of our institutions, would allow us to do. Diving into the mitochondria. I like this next part, the little airplane. Hang on, here it comes. Want to zoom in? Look at this. Isn't that great? You can pick these apart. We have all this up and running, and we're beginning to distribute this new code. You can go all the way down. When you're working this scene, you have access to databases and ontologies, if you like. So Larry Smarr always wants me to show this. This is his son, Benji, that was in the lab for a couple of years. This is just two HDTV streams from other locations. So it's a collaborative environment as well as a way of exploring data. Okay. These are just commodity screens. Two of these screens, one $500 PC. So it goes together pretty quickly, and the cost is coming down. We built the first one of these. We got Sun Microsystems to donate the cluster, and then we called it a sunscreen. That was it. So the other thing that I'm passionate about is building the visible cell. Okay. So taking these kinds of models like Allison showed you, or real data from cells, abstracting metrics that you can use, like in this case, this is from the equivalent of a camera lucida drawing, a neuro lucida drawing, putting them in databases, but then linking the locations in and on the cells to data that's in the database about things that you'd characterized at higher resolution, the actin distribution in relationship to a spine apparatus and the postsynaptic densities, the structure in a myelinated nerve with a node of Ranvier, etc. And then tying that in with information we have from our colleagues who are doing protein structure, structural genomics type work, where we can characterize here, this is a synapse at high resolution, the kind of stuff that Jack McMahon, and colleagues working with us, Alan Burnett and Richard Weinberg, are doing for synaptic spines, looking at vesicles and the globs of material, each one of those little globs probably being a new protein or protein that's described but not localized, and mapping them. Well, for actin, it's pretty straightforward. And we have the salt structure, and we can fit it already into these. So you can imagine we can build up now in the computer these models of everything we know and identify lumps we don't know, search for them, bring them in, and even begin to animate, as we do with Terry Sanofsky and his group in other projects. So what's the informatics basis? So the informatics community with whom we work helps us to come up with ways of taking our spatial frameworks and linking them to these kinds of ontological descriptions, the semantic descriptions. And so you can cascade now all the way from the large to the small with linkers that go across sites in this way. So the goal, I think, for stem cell and the rest of us is to figure out ways of bringing data together at different scales, microscopy, non-invasive imaging, the molecular data, the genomic data, and building the linkers in this direction between all these data. So we're hoping, as a member of this large science community, to work with all of you to bring this kind of capability and technology to bear on the challenges offered by stem cell biology. Thanks.
Well, sorry, I think you just acquired about 300 collaborators. We have time for maybe just one question because we're horribly behind.
What fraction of the capacity are you presently utilizing for all the
problems, you know, on that existing network? And, you know, and could you handle the problem of, say, you know, every cell in a developing organism and tracking every gene product or, you know, all the interactions? You know, or something, say, like all the cells in the brain and doing a particular computational network in the existing capacity now.
If you stained the brain and went to 1 micron resolution for a mouse brain for 3 colors, 3 proteins out of, let's say, 20,000, you're up to about 4.5 petabytes of data for 1 time point. Okay. I just bought, at great discount, 300 petabytes to help deal with the NIEHS Katrina Rita storage for $300,000. The price is halving every year. So I'm not so much worried about the data, because the rate that you all can generate it, I think we can keep up with. The bandwidth is coming up. But it's more about how you organize it. How do you get communities to work in a way that's similar to the way that kids work on their home PCs to contribute models for SimCity, right? How do you get the labor and interest of the whole scientific community to connect in and contribute to how we assemble the knowledge? That's the part that's hard. And that's more getting the gaming industry and, you know, other people involved so that we move this along. I'm not worried about the hardware and the software. I'm worried about how to make it easy for people to do.
Okay.